I'll get to that very soon. I think what's really happening, and it's sort of good that the mainstream, it's sad that Bradley Manning is, and I mean, who wants to, it's just entertainment, it's not news, right? I think the most important thing is to doing, just like you were describing, where you just, you know, you go and provide the information and the context online, because that's where people, you know, in very few years, will get all their news. So maybe we shouldn't worry too much about the mainstream media not covering it, because it's just entertainment. And I just don't see very much entertainment value in this story. The US media is not the only media that's fucked up. I mean, the media everywhere, the mainstream media, is very much fucked up. In my own little country with 320,000 people, the media there is fucked up. And it's because we're in this transformation. The media is metamorphosing into the internet, and they haven't figured out ways how to make money of it. So we actually have brilliant people like Alexia and Kevin and Nathan and many others that are covering stuff that nobody else does. And that's so much value. I think actually they probably don't realize how many people are actually reading their stuff and building their own stories on it. So it might not so, sort of go directly into the mainstream media, but it's still of critical importance. And all the different coverage of the WikiLeaks cables and the other stuff has been, I've been following it quite closely, what's been happening to it elsewhere in the world and how important it is in other countries and for nations, underrepresented nations and lots of organizations that have been trying to saying stuff for decades. And everybody said, oh yeah, it's just conspiracy. And then you can actually read it in the cables. So it is of tremendous value. And even if that might not, we might not feel the impact of it. I think this story is so interesting about the media coverage of Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks and so forth. I've been approached, I don't know how many times, by CNN, to do an interview, and then all of a sudden, after I've spent some time talking to them, they vanish. You know, I just never hear back from them. It's like I'm a leopard or something. And you know, you just automatically get this impression that there are orders from above, and it's everybody knows, you know. We really know. But so if I, because I was asked for the plan, if I may, just really quickly, it's not in tune with this, but it is a way we might be able to draw attention to Bradley Manning. So I was thinking it would be a good idea to try to coordinate events with the focus on the video in every state as the trial starts. And we can do it in very many different ways. We can do guerrilla video projecting. We can take photos of stencil that says blowing the whistle on war crime is not a crime. We can show the video in local community spaces or local TV stations or, you know, local YouTube stations. Doesn't really exist. And then upload it, and then we can try to get global voices to do similar like they did with the Occupy protests, so you sort of, you could see where stuff is happening. I think it would be really great. Like, there are some people, I talked about this at another event last night, and there were some people that volunteered to do stuff. It'd be great to have the Occupy movement, Code Pink, and all these Veterans for Peace, and all these different organizations that have been sort of involved with the Bradley Manning case, to really draw attention to, like, to try to get as much sort of citizen-initiated ways to draw attention to his case, and it would be great if people would just play the film that was played earlier with his statement, or the statement in full, in as many places as possible, because it provides context to the video, and the video is probably, even if many of the leaks were very important, It is probably the most important one because it's so visual. It just really draws you in, and it just is nothing that can really compare to it when you see it like that. And you have the context of who the people are in it. And by the way, I've just got a photo. No, the Facebook page of the guy that was gunning down the people in the helicopter today.
There are 30,000 legal documents and court rulings that are not accessible to the public. The Center for Constitutional Rights and Kevin Gastola actually is one of the individuals who filed suit with the military judge. Also spreading information about that. I mean, it's part of the reason why the press coverage has been so, because if you're not there, you know, you don't know what's going on in court. So supporting that is certainly important. Bringing that to the fore, especially as a First Amendment issue of just having access to, we're not even talking about transcripts, we're talking about the filings, the court rulings. We should know what's going on in this trial. It involves, you know, charges never been used before in a military proceeding, and I think people in the military also would be very interested in that regard.
People should know, I mean, that the charges that are being brought, or the legal theory under which Bradley Manning is being charged with aiding and abetting the enemy, has not been, the precedent is almost 150 years old. I mean, is that right? I mean, but will you get into that just a little bit? Because this is pretty astonishing stuff. And again, there's so little reporting that I think it's even the broader legal community can't look at this and say, this is absurd.
We were joking around, actually, at the next session when she rules or they have further arguments on whether or not there's, you know, receipt is required for aiding the enemy, proving aiding the enemy, that they should have Civil War reenactments in the courtroom, because the cases that they're arguing in court basically date back to the Civil War. So if we could have, like, you know, people in, like, Union blues and Confederate uniforms, I think it would be brilliant. The aiding the enemy has been used in that context, but the really weird charge is charge one of spec one of charge two. The government in court says it's unlike any existing federal violation, criminal violation, or existing punitive article under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The defense says it's a made-up offense, and the language of this charge is caused to be published intelligence on the internet, you know, intelligence belonging to the U.S. government on the internet. This language of cause to be published is very provocative. I mean, it's used like in the Sterling indictment, but fundamentally, the government is pushing here with that language. And the language of the elements, and I don't need to get into all the details of it, but it dovetails into aiding the enemy. So it's really important that the press realize how what is going on in this trial has ramifications for them. And if their institutions don't realize it, well, then individual journalists can realize.
Kevin, is your sense that there is a broader, I mean, I think you've written about how the New York Times, in some respects, was shamed into covering the trial by their ombuds person.
By Margaret Sullivan.
Yeah, I mean, is your sense that there's any type of momentum going into the June case or no?
There's certainly the potential that there's going to be a lot more, and I would think that the trial is going to be, I mean, if you're an establishment journalist, I think that you make a calculus and say in your mind that there's going to be much more headlines in the trial than there would have been in the pretrial proceedings, and so we're going to send our best reporters, if we can, to cover. Although I want to make a quick point that goes back to why we're not seeing the kinds of stories we should be seeing about Bradley Manning and the releases and the stuff that really gets to really digging into why we continue to fight the war on terrorism, because I think that's what a lot of the releases that came out implicate. It's the fact that the war on terrorism is still ongoing. And one of the things people have to recognize, and maybe Peter will have something to add, is that our journalists and media organizations have, in the last decades, taken it upon themselves, increasingly it seems, to make national security choices for us and on behalf of the government, to withhold publishing when they have the absolute right to publish, all right? Because people like James Goodall, who was the counsel for the New York Times, actually went to fight so that the Pentagon Papers could be published. They have the right to publish, but they're making these choices to withhold information. So for example, recently I wrote about how there's a woman who's going to be potentially in charge of the clandestine service at the CIA. And in that position, you typically would know who that individual is, but right now they're withholding her name, and we don't know who that person is, except the Washington Post has reported that this woman was in charge of a black site prison in Thailand, and was one of the individuals with Jose Rodriguez who signed off on the destruction of torture tapes. Now that, to me, says I should know that name. That is in the public interest to know. You know, that, a couple other quick examples to rattle off is, you know, Raymond Davis is shooting Pakistanis in that country, and the press isn't telling us. Recently, we found out about a Saudi secret drone base that the Washington Post and New York Times were both sitting on. I don't know if they were ever going to bother to investigate it, to do any reporting, but they made a calculus, even though that there's a great deal of risk in the sense that there could be blowback, or just the fact that we have a secret drone base there, and that's where we're launching our operations, just right in this country that has always inflamed that region because of the sort of operations we carry out in Saudi Arabia. So they make these choices, and I just don't think that that's their business. If the people in government want to make choices about our national security interests, that's their prerogative. But those journalists and media in these establishment organizations with great power to reach the American public and inform should not be choosing what information is good for our national security and what information is not good for our national security.
We're starting to run out of time, but before we get to, I want to give everybody an opportunity to have the last comment. So, Peter, I want you to respond to that, because in some respects, it's as if our media is the last institution, or maybe not the last institution, but it still is in this sort of traumatized post-9/11 world that, you know, we're 10, 12 years later now.
You know, I think there's a point to that. The people who spread paranoia are obviously have internalized it. I think it's to a different degree now, but you would be hard-pressed to find a drive to war in America that was not aided and abetted by the media. That's their function in elite society. This is something different, though, because it is a kind of psychology and a mentality that washes over all kinds of things, whether it's North Korea or whether it's WikiLeaks. One of the most fascinating things about all of the WikiLeaks revelations is that the most painful things to watch, whether it was the video or whether it was in some of the cables, was about innocents being killed by our military. Those are actions that we all have some responsibility, some culpability for. And the willingness and the eagerness of media to push that off and say, well, WikiLeaks, if you count it all up, it's 140 civilians. But that's not that many when you think about it in a war. Or the New York Times saying, we covered this differently than the Guardian because, you know, we've covered civilian casualties before, so we didn't feel like going over that again. You don't have a newspaper with the same things in it over and over again. That would be absurd. This is the mentality that they approach this story with because they feel the need to cover for the brutality of the war. You don't want to show that collateral murder video because it's painful, because it might get people to reflect on what's going on there, because people might see it and begin to identify with Bradley Manning's motivations. And that's dangerous. If you were to imagine, if I were Bradley Manning and I had possession of this, would I share it with the world? Journalists don't want you, or media institutions don't want you thinking like that. A flip side of this, I think, would be to imagine an Iranian Bradley Manning who had access to internal intelligence files of the Iranian government and spread them across the world and let everyone know what happens in the secret Iranian prisons and how the death sentence are meted out. That person would be the subject of parades up and down Fifth Avenue led by a CNN float. We would find that kind of whistleblower a powerful truth teller. We can't face that when someone is doing the same thing about a much more powerful and a much more, I think, violent government.
Yes. Well, I want to give everybody an opportunity to address that in just some last words. If you feel there's anything that we haven't covered, or if we want to address that, why don't we start with Alexa? If there's anything that you feel that we really need to know, and in terms from your perspective, what can people do to address both the specific circumstance that Bradley Manning's in, but also the sort of the broader issues that are implicated?
People need to inform themselves about this particular trial. You know, there's a lot of things people can do. I'm going to speak within one limited window. You know, first of all, educate yourself about the trial. The transcripts are there. If you send these to subject matter experts, ask them to make commentary on this publicly about the legal aspects of the cases. The reason why that's important, it might be boring for some people, it's something that I focus on, is because when subject matter experts talk publicly, society is able to sort of gain consensus around important ideas. And this trial needs to be deconstructed for the public. Or also, if you see that Kevin or Adam or Nathan or my coverage, scale that out. I mean, the reason why we're doing this, and I know it for myself, the reason why I do transcripts is so I'm not the only one covering this, so that other people can also take that information and put the ball down the field. You can go to alexaobrien.com.
Kevin, we'll give Brigitte the last word here. But Kevin, give us your sense of last words and what people can do.
Well, I would just echo what Alexa said and encourage you to follow our reporting and maybe many of you already are, and to also, I recommend Adam Klasfeld, courthousenews.com. He's there and is reporting, and there is a focus on it legally, and I think that is a place to go if you want expertise on that. And you know, continue to follow the work that Nathan Fuller has been doing in the same room with me. Pay attention to the fact that there is this lawsuit, as Alexa mentioned, that we're trying to release court records so that more people can see. I believe that we should see not only the rulings that have come down in this case, and not only the defense motions and any orders that have been issued, but I think we should also be able to see the government motions to know how they're arguing the case. And they owe us at least that much. They owe Bradley Manning that much, that everyone out here could know what the government is doing to prosecute him. And I'll also add that you know, Bradley Manning is one of many different individuals, and we know that Aaron Schwartz committed suicide back in January. There are probably a number of people in this room that are following the case of Jeremy Hammond, who is alleged to have been involved in the Stratfor hack, a release that ended up in the hands of WikiLeaks. And there's Barrett Brown in Texas, who the government's going after and trying to set a record, I think, for over-prosecution, although I'm sure I'm going to be proved wrong when I go home to fact-check that, but putting him in prison for a 105-year sentence, if they can, for an array of crimes for being involved in possibly linking to a Stratfor leak, release, data, file, something or other. And so I think you need to look at these dissidents, these activists, these whistleblowers who are being prosecuted, and familiarize yourself with some of the groups who are doing this work to not let the government get away with this. I know that Jesselyn Radak is in the audience with the Government Accountability Project, represents whistleblowers. I know that there's another foundation, Freedom of the Press Foundation, that has been giving a way for WikiLeaks to actually get funding because of the blockade that was put in place via PayPal and Visa, MasterCard, and making sure that they weren't getting funding. So I would go to pressfreedomfoundation.org, and right now you'll see four organizations. I'll wrap up with this last statement, that this organization is taking on new organizations or individuals every one and a half months, and giving those people platform and exposure. So like muckrock.com was an organization that benefited greatly, and they're doing Freedom of Information Act requests crowdsourced so that people can get information from their government, and then they're making sure that reporting happens. And you've got the Bureau of Investigative Journalism that worked on the WikiLeaks releases, and they're an organization that's getting recognition right now. So I would encourage you to look at those organizations.
Peter?
It's easy. FireDog Lake, give them money so Kevin can keep doing what he does. Support Alexa's work, give her money. Go to the back, any of the groups at tables, buy, borrow, whatever they're giving out, and help build that movement that way. That's the one thing that everyone in the room can do.
Brigitte?
Yeah, so I think these are really good ideas because they're on different levels, so people can do whatever within their comfort zone. I think there's a, I don't know if you're all familiar with the I Am Bradley Manning photo project. I think we should actually all be in a photo if somebody can shoot from this balcony. If somebody can make I Am Bradley Manning sign, and we can all, everybody that's in here, do that together. What do you think? And I think this needs to sort of happen on many different levels. So the idea about like doing sort of this guerrilla action to draw attention maybe in local media in different states and stuff like that in different cities is a good way. I mean, the best way to really spread the word is, you know, in your environment, and then somebody might pick up on it to spread the story of you know, the people, the very few that are reporting, and maybe, you know, tweet it or make little smaller versions of the stories, stuff that you feel is important to you. Yeah, and please help me with this project in June. I think it would be really amazing if we could do this together.
And how could people, where if people do want to help you with that project, is there a...
Who wants to be my USA coordinator for this? Okay.
Okay,
great.
Talk to that guy.
So talk to this guy. And you can get an assistant from Carrie, which has been helping with this. So maybe you can share knowledge. And I'm also starting to do exhibitions in Europe. I have a special exhibition that I'm going to set up in Berlin, and probably talk to the Berlin Parliament about the case of Bradley Manning. There's a growing knowledge and understanding among parliamentarians around the world as well about this. And then we can always just share, you know, the coverage in other countries. It's much more. And Guardian has actually been doing quite well. And so we'll just share that. I mean, it's all there. We shouldn't be relying on skeletons.
And great point. Well, I just want to add too that there's a great piece in the Nation magazine. I think it's this month by Timothy Sharrock on the NSA4 and the sort of unprecedented attacks on whistleblowers in this country. And I think certainly the Bradley Manning case can be seen in that wider context. And all of the issues that are involved with Bradley Manning, or at least many of them, are also involved in this instance. So before I thank you for coming out, I want to remind you to leave your chairs in place and quietly move to the carpeted area in the back to mingle, as there is another event going on below us. And with that said, thank you very much for coming out. Please do something if it's spreading the word of the work that these people are doing here, or on the case, or organizing through this gentleman here in the tan shirt, please do something with this information you learned tonight. Thanks for coming.
Three, two, one. On the website WikiLeaks.